Welcome to the Lonely TARDIS, your journey through Time Lords and Space, Season 3, Episode 9, where we discuss a little death in heaven. Welcome, everybody, to the ultimate, or not penultimate, it's the last Doctor Who episode of the season until the Christmas episode, and so therefore, we're here to discuss it. I'm Dolly Dymovsky, the very sick Dolly Dymovsky. So if you don't hear me through long stretches of the episode, you'll know why. I have massive amounts of phlegm in my extremely sore throat. Joining me, as always, is Sean Norton.
Hello.
Marcus Beer.
Hello.
And Steven Strom.
Hi there.
And we have much to discuss. We're going to do a season wrap-up episode next week, and this week we're going to mainly focus on the on the finale. I'm just going to go into a very brief recap. The Doctor is voted President of Earth. He does absolutely nothing the entire episode except sit in a plane and everything happens around him. Every cool character dies. Missy is extremely campy as a Time Lord, and in the end, she gets shot in a brief instant, and Danny Pink is gone forever. That's the recap of the episode, with a little bit of my snark, because this episode was absolute nonsense. And strong words for me, I hated this episode. It was the worst one of the season for me. I think I've shocked you guys into silence, but there was so much wrong with this, and Stephen Moffat was trying far too many things that nothing worked. Completely uncohesive.
Okay.
Thoughts? Anybody want to chime in? Try to get me off the Doctor Who ledge?
I don't know. I've got a lot of room.
Guys, there is a Moffat defender in chief on this podcast, and I'd like to hear from him first.
Sean.
No. Actually, you know what? I went first last time. I was very, very excited about this. I'm going to save it for last. I'm proud of being the one positive light in this beacon of dark, sad cynicalness. I'm going to wait.
Well, then I'll say my piece, because I'm going to be quiet for the majority of the episode anyway. So the Doctor, one thing that I really saw this week that happened last week as well, was the Doctor didn't do anything this episode. He was just there. There was no action around him. Not that he's an action star, but he was very sedentary, I think it's the word. He sat at a desk as the President of Earth, which is just the worst plot hook on the Earth. And Stephen Moffat took what could have been, and I loved last week's episode was fantastic, and I thought, great, we have the Master. She's only slightly campy, captures a little bit of what John Sims did in his John Sim, a little bit of the extreme campiness that he had, but she captured a little bit of that. This episode, she was completely Mary Poppins. And she came off so poorly developed. Like, somebody's phone is buzzing.
That was me. My fault. the phone's getting excited and is agreeing with you, Dom.
You know, I was okay with Missy as the Master. I thought they built her up. I don't have an issue with the Master or a Time Lord having a gender change if the story is there to support it. Things came out this week. The rumors are buzzing that what's her name, Michelle, I think the actress that plays Missy, I forget her last name, Gomez, I believe, wasn't the first choice. A male was the first choice for the character of the Master, and instead they chose a female and kind of rewrote the part a little bit for her. So she was kind of the backup the whole time. And it really shows, because it's so over-characterized to the point where she became extremely annoying on screen. Everything that came out of her mouth was a narrative turnoff for me. down to the, you know, I like the part where the where she said it's all for you for your birthday. Well, I mean, the Cybermen did nothing the whole episode. They just they go in the air, they blow up, they make more Cybermen who go in the air, blow up, and make more Cybermen. I mean, that's just that's the endless loop that we're dealt with. We had so many great threads hanging last week that this week it was just. I think those threads are just holding up a lump of poop. The only thing I did like about this episode was that final scene where the Doctor and Clara are in the cafe, and he's flat out lying to her, and she's flat out lying to him. I thought that was actually well produced, because I think in those situations, and this Doctor would, now that he's kind of become, you know, he's realized that he's sort of Clara's, you know, father figure, friend figure in her life. That, I think that scene worked well. And then he gets on the TARDIS, and they go right into the credits. And then the credits stop, and in walks Nick Frost as Santa Claus and says, oh, no, can't end like that. See you at Christmas. And I thought, oh, what a load of nonsense. Just, it's not a cliffhanger. It's just a poor, nonsensical, utilization of media. So, yeah, I was very disappointed in this episode. It went nowhere.
I'm going to step in right there, Dally, and just point out that the... Like, that is to me, the last scene is classic, like, modern Doctor Who. I guess, like, I mean, I don't know. The term classic here might go back farther than I'm actually trying to get at. But, like, every time we go into the Christmas special, where there's always some goofy thing at the end. There's always, like, some, hey, here's Donna Noble, a woman in a wedding dress suddenly just appears. Here's the Titanic bursts through the side of the TARDIS. Like, it's always something crazy and weird and lighthearted like that. So that we're not ending on a let's slit our wrists moment every single time, as it so often is in Doctor Who finales. Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I don't mind it if it was done correctly. I think it was done with the stupid post. It was a sort of Marvel post credit scene that didn't work out the way it was intended to. Like, I would have been fine if the Doctor was sitting in the TARDIS and out of nowhere Rudolph and Santa just burst in the door. You didn't have to go to the credits and then stop at the credits like 3 seconds in and switch back to Doctor Who. I thought it was. You know, it really broke up the scene for me. But anyways, those are my thoughts. I was really upset. It really bummed me out. I was so last week was so strong, and this week was the polar opposite. So I'll leave it at that. I no longer like Missy as a character, because I think they overcampified her. And I think the Doctor has... I think Peter Capaldi, although he's a fantastic Doctor, this plot just ruined... The plot this week ruined him as Doctor Who for me. Next.
Interesting.
Quick question before Steven goes. Did you like Sim's take on the Master?
I love Sim's take on the Master.
Except for the lightning. Including when he was shooting lightning bolts out of his ass and eating humans.
Except for that. So this episode was very...
No, you don't get to say except for that. It's did you like the character when he was over the top shooting lightning bolt out of his ass and camping and crazy, or didn't you?
I didn't like that camping. There were certain aspects of Sims that I really liked, and I thought that Missy would take a little bit of that, but they really campified. I don't even know.
So there's no aspects of Missy at this point that you liked.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I hate to be a downer, but I was really bummed by this episode. It was similar to some of the things that that has happened in the Tennant era, the Master. I mean, it was very much Moffat trying to do a Master episode like Russell, the RTD did, but Moffat failed at it. Even though I didn't love those episodes, I at least enjoyed them from an entertainment standpoint. This was completely unentertaining. It dragged on too long, and I mean you ruined the character of Brigadier Stewart by turning him into a fucking Cyberman. Pardon my language. And you kill off Danny Pink, who is a great character. The way they kill him off in this season, I mean, he just kind of disappears up in the sky. I that was horrible. And then they shoot the Master in mid-sentence.
Supposedly.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. I had to explode a little bit. I've been keeping it bottled up.
Oh, I get the feeling you're going to have a lot of support.
I was telling Marcus before the show started that I was just reading the Twitter replies, and they're all pretty much in that vein. All right, who wants to go next?
That's a tough one to follow. I don't know.
How about Marcus? I want to hear Marcus.
All right. Yeah, let me get ready. Do some stretching.
Stretch.
Let's start at the end, and I'm not talking about the Nick Frost Santa ho ho ho, because obviously after that, and I don't know if you guys have seen it, but the full trailer for the Christmas episode has been revealed. So I figure we'll talk about that bit of interestingness later. But that final scene with Clara, kind of liked it. It felt kind of human.
Exactly.
Two people who obviously care for each other,
yep,
have grown apart. I mean, it felt like a little breakup.
Yep.
It did feel like a breakup. That was really, you know, kind of touching. The previous hour and 5 minutes, I've wiped from my mind. let's pick a few random points. The Doctor has been voted President of the Earth. Can you imagine any government giving up, you know, can you imagine the US giving up power of the world to the Doctor? No. Okay, so that's totally unrealistic and stupid, and just especially based on what we've seen in the past with regards to, you know, how, you know, at the end of the, was it the first, was it the Sound of Drums, and when, you know, the US president took over from the master in negotiations with the Toglafane. I mean, you know, it's that kind of thing that's like, again, just, you know, oh, look, how do we explain this? Let's just explain it with away with one word and forget canon. Or at least recent history. So there's that. There's the Brigadier thing. Yes, The Adventures of Cyber Brigadier coming to BBC America Children's this fall. That was just stupid. And the fact that we had a picture of Lethbridge Stewart, that, you know, a portrait up on the wall of the plane, that was cool. That was all we needed. We didn't need the Brigadier coming back from the dead, overriding. And I mean, only two people could override the Cyberman programming, Danny Pink and the Brigadier, because of the love for their kids or their girlfriend or their military training, which means that basically anybody who loves anybody or anybody who has military training and is a Cyberman won't follow cyber orders. Okay. All right. That's another glaring plot hole that our boy has thrown up. Let's talk about the unit guards, shall we? I mean, we'll start off with the first time the Cybermen appear, and everybody's taking selfies with Cybermen, and oh, look at that, a bit of ironic social commentary that people would rather take pictures with a strange alien-looking menace than run away screaming or, you know, run for the nearest cop. Okay. And then it turns out that they're all unit, and unit turns up with the old head and, you know, Miss Lethbridge Stewart, you know, and Oswin, you know, she turns up, and they take the Doctor to the TARDIS, Doctor on the TARDIS and Missy to this airplane. You know, it's Doctor on a plane, which is sounds like a sex comedy, to be honest.
They put him on an airplane with flying Cybermen all around them. That makes no sense.
When he has the safest place on the planet in his TARDIS with all the shielding and could hold 10,000 people, no problem at all. So that's an issue. And then, of course, we make sure we put Missy next to the fucking TARDIS in, you know, what is apparently a big jumbo plane for ruling the world. But they've only got room for the TARDIS and Missy right next to her on a dolly, and only two guards. This is, you know, the most dangerous person on the planet. Only two guards who are obviously half asleep when they can't see, even though they're right behind her, they can't see her taking off the handcuffs. They don't even react when she's putting on her lipstick. And, of course, we leave her right down there next to the only computers they have, and Oswin, who then, you know, an interesting character who gets killed. So, you know, we have all of those issues. There's just so many plot points. I mean, you know, apparently Clara's timeline's finished. Is she coming back in the Christmas special? Maybe, who knows? But as far as we know, you know, despite a lot of masturbatory level reviews from various people on various sites who said, oh, this is the perfect closure. It still leaves so much fucking unanswered from totally the impossible. Totally. It's like, you know, that's it. You get to go off now, Clara, and I'm going to go off to find Gallifrey, and Gallifrey's not there, and I punchy. But how about, well, before I go, how the fuck did you get out of my timeline, you know, on Trenzalore? What happened there? I mean, can we at least clarify that? How the hell does Danny Pink have somebody who is in the future, you know, a descendant and a time traveler, when the fuck is dead?
Yep.
I mean, he's not only dead now, he's dead, Cyberman dead, and then dead Cyberman from beyond the grave. I mean, what did he do? Come back and poker it poltergeist style? I mean, they're writing shit and contradicting it 4, 5, 6 episodes later. And this was, of course, the episode, you know, the episode I'm talking about now, you know, the Don't Breathe one or whatever it was, you know, the under the bed thing, that everybody lauded as the most brilliant, touching episode of Doctor Who. Well, they just fucking negated it over the space of 2 episodes. And so how anybody can defend 1, Moffat, and 2, this season is beyond me. Despite the best effort of Jenna Coleman, despite the best efforts of Peter Capaldi, and, you know, even the guy who played Danny Pink, I mean, he didn't have much to work with, but he tried. Those 3 worked hard. I'm not a big fan of the Missy Master character, regardless of gender. I said this last week. The Master is not an overgrown clown loon who wants to snog the Doctor and fly in like Mary Poppins. And, you know, she's almost like a 1970s Bond villain caricature. And it's a shame that she didn't get a chance to really work with the character and push forward. I mean, we'll probably will see her again because Moffat has said he loves the way, you know, the old style Master was killed off only to reappear a couple of seasons later. And, well, I escaped. You know, one thing I do want to set correct for anybody listening, because the internet seems to think that the Doctor shot Missy, or the Brigadier shot Missy. It wasn't. It was Danny. Danny shot Missy. Let's clarify that first and foremost. He's the one who shot Missy. Doctor didn't. Clara didn't. The Brigadier didn't appear and do that. It was Danny.
I don't think so. Hadn't he flown into the clouds by that point?
Yeah, he did, and then the Brigadier...
Did he trigger the explosion?
Because there's the salute at the end anyway, like where it's like the Doctor salutes at that Cyberman, and there was the whole talk about...
He hadn't gone into the explosion. He hadn't gone into the thing by then. He had his big speech, didn't he?
No, he flew into the sky, and then everybody followed him.
He definitely did. And then, yeah, then the Doctor salutes that last Cyberman because it's the Brig.
All right, well, I'll sit corrected on that, but it definitely wasn't the Doctor who killed...
No.
I saw people say, they made him kill. He didn't. So fair enough. I'll step back and rewatch that. Actually, I'm not going to rewatch that. I'm not watching
that. I could see there's an argument, a debate about whether or not she teleported away at the same time she was shot because the effects are similar.
Moffat came out afterwards and did an interview where basically he said that one of his favorite things about the Master in the old context was that the Master would definitively 100% die at the end of every story that he came in. And then he would just come back in another story and say, like, I escaped. And
didn't I say that? Did you just say that thing?
Oh, sorry. I guess I missed that part. I wasn't paying enough attention.
See, this is what happens. You don't pay attention. You automatically switch off. You're as bad as Sean.
Hey, I'm fully switched on, brother.
I have been trolling Sean like a bastard this on Facebook, social media. Anytime he complains about something, I blame Moffat.
It's really good. He's everywhere, all the time and space. Fucking Marcus Beer.
I am everywhere. I'm in your timeline.
Shit.
It's just been, you know, and I've had reaction from people at Twitter where, you know, it's been, I would say, 15-1 against this series. People have not liked this season, despite Capaldi and, you know, the other strong points. You know, we've had some lows. We've had some incredible lows, and then that's made the other episodes that perhaps in other seasons would be average to above average seem like absolute godsends.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I've said my bit.
Okay, yeah. I can go if anybody doesn't object.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think the too long didn't read version of my thoughts on this episode are that the episode itself has a lot of like major consistency problems that I think Marcus did a fine job of explaining right away. Like the, I think that the scene with Missy and Oswin, if that was just Missy and Oswin in the same room together talking by themselves, like I would buy that. But yeah, absolutely. Like what, like then this is just an example of a sort of like a kind of a through line through the episode of just like weird logical errors. I was just like, why didn't these two guards notice any of this stuff? Why didn't they react when, like, Missy is clearly just saying, like, I'm going to kill you, and is, like, counting down and stuff? They don't even move. They don't flinch. They don't do anything. They just stand there like statues as they get vaporized to death. And that sort of thing happens throughout the episode. That was a tangent. What I actually meant to say on the, like, the short version of this is that I think if you take this episode by itself, it's just kind of a mediocre episode with some, I think, some effective characterization. I actually do like the Missy Master, the Master, whatever she calls herself. I like the actor who plays her. I think that was fine. But if you take it in the context of like the season in general, a season that I will be the one of the first to admit has been fucking garbage. You know, as a whole, this provides no payoff. It's no. There's like I feel like nothing happened at the end of this one that like justifies any of the garbage that we've had to sit through throughout. And it's actually one of the things that I was kind of laughing at Dally for this a little bit, like the idea that this ruins Capaldi as the Doctor for you, Dally. It's just like, have you watched this season? Like the Doctor, you this is what ruins the Doctor for you. The Doctor wasn't already ruined for you 3 episodes into this. Like fucking nonsense that we've had to sit through.
I had a lot of hope early on, and some of the episodes were fantastic, and I loved the last episode. But like both you and Marcus said, there was no payoff to this. There's nothing that made this Doctor a memorable Doctor. He's done nothing except eyebrows, which they reference every episode. Okay, we get it, eyebrows, we get it.
Right, right. The one thing I think, so I can, what I think I see is I think I see where Moffat thought he was providing us payoff. I think this is where he was like, ah, yes, this is my brilliant moment. This is the moment that will all shine. And, you know, I won't necessarily, like, you know, jump on his bones or anything like that and start, like, you know, tearing him down for making a mistake here, even though this is about the 37th goddamn finale that we've had where he makes a mistake. But I think the moment that he was trying to tell us, like, this is the thing, was when the Master finally gives the control of the Cyberman army to the Doctor, and the Doctor's like, am I a good man? No, I'm an idiot. Like that, I think that was what he was trying to get at. And the reason I think that is because throughout this season, we've sat through the Doctor being like this kind of piece of shit, which I've said many times, like how much I've disliked this nihilistic, pessimistic Doctor that's constantly telling the human race how much it sucks and how at the end it's all going to be terrible because you're the worst and you're all a bunch of idiots and pudding brains and all that stuff, because it, to me, is antithetical to what makes the Doctor the Doctor. And I thought that, like, Moffat was thinking, like, ah, yes, now you've sat through a whole season of the Doctor being mean and garbage and terrible to everyone that he's encountered. Now here's the moment where the Doctor finally realizes that, ah, yes, I have been mistaken about, you know, my belief this whole time. The problem with that is that it's artificial. Like, they just engineered literally out of, you know, necessity, like, in a flash, in a literal flash, like, in a sneeze, I guess, or whatever, this Doctor into this crappy, you know, angry jerk that he has been all season. Like, it wasn't that, like, he came to the conclusion the way that, like, you know, Christopher Eccleston, you know, for as much garbage as we can say about Christopher Eccleston now, I thought the idea at the time, Russell T. Davies bringing him back and saying, like, no, it's been decades, the Doctor's been gone, you know, there was the movie, I guess, but, you know, we've had a long time to sit on this and miss Doctor Who and stew on this. And in that time, a lot of bad stuff has happened. And by virtue of not having to see any of that stuff, we were able to, like, mentally fill in some gaps of why he's so much more violent and maybe so much more angry about things like that. And with this one, it was just literally like, okay, the Doctor is regenerated, so this new Doctor is just going to be a jerk. Like, okay? Like, that was just an arbitrary decision on the Moffat's team and whatnot. Like, you know, this is going to be the darker Doctor or whatever it was, whatever their logic behind it was. And then at the end they said, like, ah, so now here's your payoff. It's the Doctor realizing he's been wrong this whole time. It's just that there was nothing for him to correct himself on. Like, the logic that he had only existed because they shunted it in there, and then we had to sit through episode after episode after episode of him, like, just being this anti-doctor that I hated so much. And that moment, like, does, like, nothing about it makes any of that worth it. Like, I couldn't deal with that. And I'll also agree with Marcus on some other things. You know, like I said, I think that just, like, the whole Oswin master killing the guards thing was just, like, one example of many things that happened. And one of those things, like, the Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart turning out to be, and I did look up just now the plot summary just to make sure, it was, in fact, Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart that killed Missy at the end. Like, yeah, the idea that, like, only two Cybermen in the whole world can overcome the power of the cyber nectus matrix slice or whatever, you know, and that it just happens to be these two characters that we just happen to have at this specific moment that will tie into this story that we just brought up out of nowhere. Like, none of that works for me. It's just super, like, everything else in the episode, it was just, and this whole season, it's just super forced. There's nothing, there's no build up to it. There's no, like, it's just like, hey, we want to make these nods and we want to make these stories because it's what we want to do right now. Not because it makes sense for the characters, not because it makes sense for where the plot is going right now, but because it's what we felt like at this time. Because I think I have a good idea that could maybe be a good idea if given the time to work it, and then they just don't do anything with it. So, yeah, I don't know. That's kind of how I felt about the episode. That said, like I said, I still like the Master. I think she was – I still think she's fine. I'd like if you'd taken out those guards, I thought the tension that she builds with the whole countdown timer killing Oswin thing is effective, if only because we've seen this character a number of times. It's not like a very traditional thing on Doctor Who, where it's just like, okay, here's, you have 25 minutes to get to know this character, get to care about them, and then by the end of the episode, they'll be dead. Well, generally speaking, Doctor Who doesn't make us care about these characters that constantly die, but she's been around enough where there is a little bit of impact there. I still think bringing Kate along made a lot of sense, because I think Kate Stewart is incredible. I think she's awesome, and she should be in the show way, way more. But yeah, just on the whole, the plot of the episode, remove the individual performances from it, and none of it is cohesive. Like, it's just not great.
Sean.
Yeah. You guys really, really, really didn't like this show.
I'm not, like, angry about it the same way that a couple of guys are,
You mean me and Marcus? A couple of guys.
I am not angry anymore. I'm just sad. I'm not angry. It's not even worth my time to get wound up about it anymore week after week of just banal, below par, insulting Doctor Who. It's just like a resigned sigh until Moffat goes.
Mm-hmm. Well, he sent me wondering if... If I'm just like, if I just suffered some sort of mental break at some point, and I don't even realize I should dislike the show, like if I'm just in some sort of weird, like, mental state where the show broke me ages ago, like Marcus had, just described.
Don't fall into peer pressure, Sean. You can.
No, that's exactly what I'm thinking right now. It's because I can't remember the last time, if ever, that I have felt so differently, or haven't felt, I guess, is the way to describe how you guys are feeling. You're all on the same level. Well, you're on the same page in different levels of just disappointment or anger or resigned sadness or whatever. And I remember sitting there on the couch watching the show for the episode for, I don't know, second or third time. And I agree on some of the silly plot stuff. The guards really do stand out. From everywhere you look, everybody you talk to, it's just a bizarre. I don't know if something happened with the direction there or if – I don't know. I don't really get that. That's just really bad, like glaringly bad. And it's a shame because I think the rest of that scene is brilliant. I think taunting her with death, counting down, putting the lipstick on, like all of that was phenomenal. And it's a shame that there's this kind of like disappointing cloud of like two goofy guards behind her. Like Steven said, I think if you take them away, that scene just gets elevated so much higher. So that kind of stuff is a disappointment. I don't necessarily agree with the whole like – I feel like UNIT taking the Doctor away, making him the quote-unquote president, is dumb, but I kind of interpret it as just yet again, human arrogance, like thinking they know what's best, thinking what's right, putting this Doctor not in his TARDIS, but on an airplane. Like, I saw that as inevitable failure and something people were punished for. But, you know, I can keep going, but I think that the bottom line is that I enjoyed it and no one else did here. I could really drill down into the things I really liked. Like, you know, Dolly, you're over with the Master, you're disappointed with the Doctor, whatever. I'm not. Steven, you think the whole season's worth of Doctor Who has been, you know, his character portrayal has been awful. I disagree. I think I've loved it. I've said it week after week. I love what Capaldi's bringing. I love the 180 from Smith and Tennant, you know, and I really appreciate kind of how, you know, what he became at the end here. And then, of course, that scene with Clara where they're lying to each other and he loses it over finally hoping that, you know, the Master had told him something true, finally hoping that he found Gallifrey. Because who knows, maybe there are things going on in the background each week with the writing on the board and everything that, you know, we aren't seeing, but he's doing. And maybe he's been on this hunt, which I guess was implied in this episode, which is finally mentioned for the first time all season. And to see him break down like that, I thought was great. And I think that answers the question of whether or not we'll start hearing and looking, or seeing rather, more of the Gallifrey stuff. But at the same time, there is, I will admit that there is a lot of that kind of reach. Like, you have to fill in, like, you have to sort of make these conclusions yourself because the story isn't delivering that to you. And I totally get why people are upset about that. And I totally get why people are upset about the writing or the lack of Cyberman or the Doctor actually doing anything or whatever. But I don't know. It just doesn't bother me as much as it bothers some other people. I still think overall that the good outweighs the bad. I think the Master's Missy, whatever, I thought her performance was great in the whole, like, bananas but calculated bananas way, which I thought was a much better interpretation of what they forced Sims to do with the character.
Again, it's Sim. Like, everybody keeps saying Sims on this podcast.
Sorry, Sim.
Oh, whatever. How do you pronounce that infamous Time Lord's name, Steven? The female?
In the Ronnie?
You son of a bitch.
Uh-huh.
Oh, boom. But yeah, but it's just, you know, it's stuff like that. Like, I enjoyed it. And I can go into why, but I think you guys really, really just covered a lot of what you didn't like, and that's fine. A lot of that I felt the opposite about. So.
Two things that I would like to get off my chest before we finish, just because, or before we move on, I guess, just because you reminded me of two things, Sean, there, that everybody else talked about that, but I, for some reason, just didn't think of. The President of the World thing bothered me, but it's interesting to me that it bothered me in, like, kind of the exact opposite way that it bothered you, Sean, or maybe not even bothered you, but, like, the
part that... I wasn't super bothered by it. I just thought it was, like, silly Doctor Who stuff.
Right. But, like, your interpretation of it was, like, human arrogance, and actually, like, the reason it bothered me was kind of because I felt the exact opposite. I thought it was sort of an inversion on the whole Torchwood type thing, like the first ever Torchwood mentioned thing in the Christmas special with the Sycorax and everything, where I thought that was human arrogance. I thought that was meant to, like, be human arrogance. That was supposed to be, hey, look at us. We can destroy whatever we want because it's what's best for humanity or whatever. In this case, I thought it was like, okay, we're going to make the Doctor into the President of the United States. But again, I thought it was just kind of another, or not the United States, the Earth. I thought it was kind of another moment on this whole idea of, like, the Doctor is so much better than all of us, and that we are also terrible, and the human race has no future or anything like this.
Yeah, because... but it was, it's human error in the sense that they think they know what's best for him when he said he didn't want to know part of that.
No, what I'm getting at is, like, that's, I took that as the exact opposite of that. I don't, my thought there wasn't that they thought that they knew what was best for him so much as they thought he knew what was best for them. So they were like, please save us, you know, please come here and just be here to save us so we don't have to think for ourselves.
Yeah, but they didn't do any of that. They tasered him or knocked him out or whatever they did, took him away from his ship, and then forced him into a situation he didn't want to be in the first place. Because right. They thought that was for the best. Not that they thought he thought that was for the best.
No, I'm not saying that I'm saying what them saying, like, hey, please make all of our decisions for you. We're going to force you into a situation where you have to make all of our decisions for you. Was them basically giving up the idea that, like, yeah, of course, he's better than us. And it's something that really bothers me. It was something that almost bothered me. I went to see Interstellar yesterday. It was something that almost bothered me about that. It's a thing that happens in science fiction of this idea that, like, humanity will never figure it out on their own. They always have to, like, it's always because somebody else, and I'm all for, like, the idea of, like, mutual cooperation and that sort of thing, but, like, always people giving their freedoms up to some other greater, smarter being because they, like, they just want to be dominated and want to obey in some way, even if it's willing domination. Like, I absolutely hate that, and to me, that's what this really read as to me. This is,
yeah,
like,
but that's why it's been the face of everything he's done this season, of trying to make humans and, you know, Clara or Danny or whoever decide on their own and make their own decisions. He wants to step back, and UNIT comes along, and instead of thinking about how they've worked together in the past to, you know, help each other out, they just are like, oh, no, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to tell him what he has to do, and then we're going to wait for him to do it. And it just warped the complete, like, the whole, you know, dynamic together, and it bit them in the ass.
Yeah, but I don't think it, well, I don't think it really bites him in the ass. Like, eventually he does end up saving the day, or at least him and his people end up saving the day. Like,
how many people died along the way?
Yeah, some people always die on Doctor Who. Like, there are, you know, whether the Doctor's in charge, whether everybody else is in charge, name an episode without kids in it where people don't die on Doctor Who. Like,
where main recurring characters die is pretty rare.
Main recurring characters, sure, but people always die in the process. Like, you know, there's always some, that was, like I said, right. That was a point that I thought that, you know, Doctor Who loves to introduce these, like, throwaway characters and that they expects us to care about. And that was actually something I liked about this episode, is that, like, there were stakes higher than just, like, hey, here's this character you've never seen once before, so here, let's kill them. But no, like, what I'm saying, I'm not saying, like, I'm not talking about what the Doctor's opinion of everything is, or what the character's opinion are. I'm talking about the showrunners coming up and like, in the behind-the-scenes message of the show being, like, hey, we, the writers of the show, are trying to tell you that humanity is, you know, worthless or in some way or whatever, and, like, here is our version of events where humanity has to, like, you know, feel like it relies on someone else because secretly that's all humanity wants, is to, like, have somebody be their freaking king or something like that. You know, it's never humanity makes its own decisions. That's like a villainous trope. That's like a thing that a lot of bad guys say. That's Kevin Spacey in Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. You know,
very interesting. I didn't interpret that at all.
Yeah, it's something I think about a lot too. So, you know,
Interesting.
Anyway, well, you other two guys can chime in anytime.
It's hard to go further with this episode because it's not beloved.
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
In a New York cemetery somewhere.
Yeah.
Were Amy and Rory Cybermen?
Oh, that's a great point. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know they said that they were selectively rising before he could get the whole, like, it would take 24 hours for the whole human race, but that was one of the weird questions I had. I was waiting for them to go over the top and, like, pan to a tombstone and it would have their names on it or something.
That's another thing, like, and I just know that this is going to just, this is how it's going to shake out next season too, is just, like, Doctor Who keeps constantly wanting to have these big sort of stakes-changing things at the end of every season of Doctor Who that just never have any impact or alter the world in any way. And not even just the world of the Doctor, like, once again, like, I knew that there was rumors going into this episode that the Master would eventually become the new companion to the Doctor leading into next season, and that they were going to fly around looking for Gallifrey together, and I knew that was going to be wrong, because I knew that was going to be wrong because they already did that once. They already had David Tennant go to John Sims' master and say, and that was Sims with an apostrophe S to show possessive, by the way, with John Sims' master. SIMM apostrophe S. And he ends up killing himself rather, or letting himself die rather than join up with the Master or with the Doctor, because at the end of every season, like, the Doctor Who just refuses to change anything. So in the going into next season, I just know nobody's going to acknowledge or care about the fact that, oh yeah, by the way, all of our dead loved ones that, you know, were buried in the ground and, you know, we have these all these religious beliefs based around this, or we had all these like different you know, places set aside for them and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, that's gonna have absolutely zero impact on the world. The world's just gonna be like, oh, I guess the dead have risen and turned into robots and exploded in the sky and burned everything in the world. Oh well, whatever, let's just move on. It's just not, the status quo never changes despite how many times they want to try and make it seem like it does, or do something at least that looks crazy enough that it would change things. And then, you know, with the Daleks invading the Earth in season four, like, oh, by the way, cracks in time erased all that from ever happening. Or
yeah, that was something I really liked in the Davies era. Every season did build on the fact that this was a version of humanity that had been experiencing alien stuff for a long time. Like, yeah. Torchwood came out of that and everything, and they did acknowledge that, but then Moffat wiped it away with the cracks and the forgetting and everything like that.
I hate it. I hate it so much. I hate this, like, walking back on every kind of major decision they make, just so at the end, at the beginning of the next season, we can have a bunch of characters all just running around doing the exact same thing they did last season.
Except for this particular ending. I'm trying to think of an ending during the Moffat era where humanity even knew what was going on. Like, in terms of, like, Daleks in the sky, or, you know, the Rachnos spaceship or whatever. Because if you think about it, they were pretty self-contained Matt Smith stories, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
No one
yep.
knew about the Pandorica. No one knew about, you know, the time paradox where River doesn't kill him and then explode, you know, everything like that. And then Amy and Rory went out in season 7 in a very self-contained Weeping Angel storyline. So I kind of get what you're saying in, like, a very contained way that nothing changes, Stephen, though I'm not sure I agree. But I think this – that – complaint you have might have to be shelved until we see how next season handles it, because it really hasn't been this kind of earth changing moment that I can think of off the top of my head since the reset with the cracks in time. Mm-hmm.
You know, this I mentioned this to Marcus in the pre-show. I almost look back fondly on the Matt Smith era, because it, Steve and I agree with you, it did feel kind of self-contained, and by that I mean it wasn't rooted in Doctor Who lore. You know, as much as, you know, this 12th Doctor seems to want to be. We ran into Cybermen once in a while, or Daleks, but beyond that, it was very much stories that revolved around Matt Smith and New Aliens and Amy and Rory. And I almost look back now thinking, well, that was actually kind of it's almost fondly in a sense. So
I think it's a plan by Moffat to actually make the Matt Smith era feel a lot better than it actually was.
Yeah.
Because this season makes zero sense.
Yep.
I think you guys have very short memories.
I'm happily having a short memory right now.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we, before we, any other thoughts right now before we move on to feedback from our listeners?
I think the only other thing I want to say is that one thing I do appreciate about this episode, again, because I'm not super
that
angry.
That it's over.
There's a no, but there are parts of it I enjoyed. I mean, and one of those parts is that, and it actually seems kind of like an oddity to me. I won't say that I like it or dislike it, because it just seems weird, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. But mm-hmm. we've gone through season after season with Moffat in the charge, with one part season finales where he tries to shove in every absolute thing that he can, with the weird hot air balloons, flying mm-hmm. cars around London, and Winston Churchill is a Roman god or whatever, and we try to get through all those like weird, crazy, bombastic things in 60 minutes, and now we have an episode or a story anyway that is two episodes long. We finally get a two-parter, and it's really low key. There's not a lot of crazy, weird, like special effects type stuff going on. Yep. It's mostly kick talking.
Perhaps they'd run out of budget.
Sorry?
What
was that? Perhaps they ran out of budget.
Maybe.
That is 100% something that ran through my mind. Like, because you look at Flatline, and like I remember thinking at the time, like, wow, and Flatline and then the Kill the Moon episode. Both of those episodes, I'm like, wow, this looks gorgeous for Doctor mm-hmm. Who. The special effects on the Boneless look amazing. These look incredible. And then you look at in the Forest in the Night, or whatever the fuck that piece of shit episode is called, and it's just like, here's a bunch of child actors running around a forest for an hour, and then I come into this one, it's just like, here's a bunch of people on a set, and they're talking, but they're not really doing much. And I'm wondering, like, I wonder if they did blow their budget on those, specifically those two episodes.
Should we talk about the I mean, you've all seen the teaser that released for the Christmas episode, yeah?
Yeah, we could do that, yeah.
Yeah. So I think we should probably discuss that because obviously it leads on to the, you know, it leads from the Nick Frost appearance. Who, look, by the way, Nick Frost is a comedy god as far as I'm concerned. I mean,
totally agree.
Yeah, you know, I watched him in a film called Cuban Fury a couple of weeks ago.
How was that?
It's really funny. I mean, it's cheesy as hell, but it's really funny.
Excellent.
So yeah, I mean, to go from that, you know, sad ending of, you know, the Doctor and Clara going their separate ways, and the, you know, the, and the Doctor, you know, taking off and wondering what he's going to do next, and ho ho fucking ho jingle bells. I mean, this just, I mean, it left me feeling like the whole season's been a practical joke. And you know, I half expect the start of the neck of the Christmas episode to be the Doctor in the shower. And, you know, Clara comes on the TARDIS, comes looking for him, opens the door, and there he is. And perhaps it's Matt Smith all over again. And so this has just been a joke. But that said, the trailer for the Christmas special starts off very promising.
Mm-hmm.
Xenomorph, it's got a very Aliens vibe on the pole. Xenomorphs.
Mm-hmm.
Then to see Santa turn up with elves, bit disconcerting.
Mm-hmm. Santa will be an alien, or I would love to see Santa be a Time Lord, because nobody can move around the planet that quickly unless they have a time machine.
Okay, I'm gonna watch this. I've not seen this teaser yet, so I'm gonna mute myself and I'm gonna watch this trailer real quick.
Well, I mean, the it reminded me of, and I don't know if you've seen Scrooged with Bill Murray.
Yeah.
They run a trailer for Lee Majors saving Santa.
Oh, huh.
It reminded me of that. Well, it's like, you know, Blood at the North Pole or whatever it was. But
Peter Capaldi's Doctor as Scrooge. I can see that.
Well, this whole, we've done the Scrooge thing a couple of years ago with, you know, the sharks going through the air. But this, you know, this fascination with the mythical fictional characters, the Robin Hood earlier this year. Now, and the, you know, Santa, this whole thing in the last couple of episodes with the Todd, you know, the Gallifreyan technology of the Matrix. And I'm wondering, you know, is this all linked? Is that the thing that we're finally going to get a payoff from? Because otherwise it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, Doctor Who can get away with not making sense, you know, oh, there's a MacGuffin or blah, blah, blah. And that's, you know, we can accept it because, you know, it's fun storytelling. But this season's just been all over the shop, in and out of the Doctor's history and future, Danny's, you know, Clara's, mythical characters, you know. I'm just wondering, are we going to get to the end of the Christmas special and have something of a cliffhanger that is basically going to set us up for next 6 months or 7 months after that? We're just going to be batshit crazy waiting for what's going to go on, because the Moffat is at his most egotistic.
I feel like traditionally we don't,
he can't leave us like this. He cannot put a season out like that and sit back and expect people to be happy with it, because so many people I've known and I have seen have been so disappointed with this season, and, you know, highlighted the main three characters as the only high points, you know, in various scales. But he can't do that. I mean, otherwise I'm sure they'll tell him to fuck off.
I feel like you and I should switch circles we run in, because I'm very curious where these people are. Because, like, I see more mixed, but I also see a lot of positive. So, like, all the hate you discuss, I don't know. Have that said, historically, I feel like Christmas doesn't normally go cliffhanger-y, with the exception of when Clara got introduced. So I don't know. I would be surprised if it – my guess is it's going to be more neat ribbon-y, you know, because they're not going to want to leave. That was a sad ass ending for Clara, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Super sad. For both of them. And, sure, exactly. And they get, but I still don't fully get, like, I wish, and I could talk about this in our next episode when we go with the whole season. I wish we had gotten more, just a little bit more characterization on why Capaldi is the way he is. you know, whether or not it's because of spending 900 years on Trenzalore or the Gallifrey stuff is now behind him, whatever. But I feel like we will get a happier resolution for Clara, and maybe that's why Santa Claus is introduced at the end there. And I don't really know how I don't know how any of it's going to fit in, like with those alien-looking things or whatever. I really like the idea of Santa being a time traveler, though, to get everybody around, and that's how the legend starts. That's awesome.
Man, okay, a time traveler said, who gets around all the time and has been around for hundreds of years.
Or uses tech or whatever. I don't know. It doesn't have to be hundreds of years. A legend can be born and not be hundreds of years alive.
What I'm saying is, what if he's a Time Lord? What if Santa is a rogue Time Lord? And Santa, at the end of the episode, the gift he gives to the Doctor is the coordinates to Gallifrey. I don't know.
Like I said, that's what I just said, Stephen. What if Santa is a Time Lord?
What if Santa is the Rani? Regenerate, change gender.
There you go.
Oh, Christ. Yeah. But don't be surprised.
The Valyard. He's the Valyard.
He's the next, you know, he's the final regeneration of the Doctor. The Doctor finally, like, you know, he retires. He's like, okay, well, you know, I got something better to do with my life. Did somebody just like, get really pissed off about that and just throw their mic across the room? That's what it sounded like.
Not me.
All
I was gonna say is that whole future descendant looking like Danny thing seems like a way too big thing, even for Moffat to just throw in and not acknowledge again. Yep. So don't be surprised if one of the things Clara wanted to tell Mr. Pink before the car accident was that she was carrying little Pink around.
Oh boy. Oh yeah.
Interesting. Interesting.
Don't be surprised if
That could be it.
You know, because genre fiction always handles pregnant women so well, and it's all like the storytelling that they do with that, like little chestnut, is always handled perfectly.
Literally, they don't have to do anything. Like they literally just have to reference it, and the Doctor can kind of smile, and then she can go on her Mary Poppins way, and that's it. Like they don't have to do anything to screw that up. They have to do nothing. It's one line.
I think she's like confirmed for the next season, though, isn't she?
I don't know. I don't think so.
No.
I thought I saw something along.
They haven't announced anything for season 9, technically.
Correct. But it goes into writing in January, right?
She's pregnant, but because she's been on the TARDIS so long, it's a Time Lord baby, and this Doctor marries it. Oh, shit. That totally wild and stupid storyline, that's been done. Who did that one again?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
maybe Missy marries him.
Missy marries Santa. She's Missy Claus.
Missy Claus, there you go.
Oh, good Lord, we're done here. All right. We're not gonna have any better lines than that this episode, so we should probably just wrap it up.
I don't know if she was I haven't read the actual article. I just read the link I sent you guys, but apparently she is coming back. So
Missy, I looked at that when you were the one that you liked, yeah.
Which I'm very happy about. I know I quite enjoyed her performance. Whether or not we agree on the story itself, I thought she did a wonderful job as a new master. And I also liked the fact that, you know, the master was trying to impress as opposed to dominate and all this other stuff. But that's fine. So that's interesting.
Jokery,
too.
Right?
Like it was very jokery. It was absolutely very jokery. But instead of like 60s Joker trying to beat Batman, this is like Heath Ledger Joker trying to like impress Batman, you know, like trying to convince Batman he is something he's not or has this side to him that he doesn't.
Or yeah,
the crazy ass scheme was just a way to impress the Doctor and get her friend back or get his validation of her or whatever. I thought that was great personally.
Yeah, and like you know, it's something you look at other science fiction. Doctor Who is obviously more fantastical than a lot of like, you know, say Star Trek or whatever. But you know, there oftentimes, you know, those stories will be about in something harder science fiction like Star Trek, you know, quote unquote harder, but sometimes the conflict is one of like, let's go fight this monster or let's go save this planet or whatever, but sometimes it is just more of a political or interpersonal or, you know, even ecological kind of event that they're dealing with as opposed to like an actual war. And Doctor Who, you know, it's never really traditionally done that kind of thing. You know, it's never really concerned itself with that. It's always been kind of very monster of the weeky, but you know, hints and nods to something a little bit like less, more along the lines of like, hey, we don't always have to be just about fighting something. I guess even that, I say this, and then of course the one example that I could think of in recent Doctor Who where they don't really fight anything is in the Forest of the Fucking Night or whatever, again, whatever that's goddamn called. So I guess this isn't maybe the best example for what I'm trying to get at. But, you know, I like that a story can sometimes not just necessarily be about just everybody trying to fight something or kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so let's go into, before we give our ratings, I just want to give a little bit of feedback that we got from our listeners. And see what you guys think. So, John Kay says, so that finale capped that roller coaster of quality season by leaving me with a question about Orson Pink.
Quality season, huh?
Yep.
I told you I wasn't alone.
Scott Nixon at Scott Nixon says, good and grim, still messy story. Clara has arrived. Can't believe I wanted her gone. They did a really good job of making me like Danny Pink and then killing him.
Also true.
Yep. Aubrey T says,
all those sentiments. Yeah. Do you remember when, like, and we've said this on a lot of episodes, when we just were just so bored and so disappointed in Clara as a companion?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, how things change for the
better. All through last season. This season, she was great.
So good. So good.
Aubrey T says, I've never laughed so hard, and that's a bad thing. Killing my favorite side character and dragging the Brigadier back is just sad.
Yeah, trotting his, I don't know if I
his carcass. Got it bad enough,
but trotting his carcass out in like a fucking robot doll body and everything like that is just like, just let that be. The whole Brigadier General, you know, he died before the doctor was able to come talk to him, and like that stands alone in itself as such a like a heartfelt moment to me. And like trotting him out as like this fucking puppet, just like bothered me so much. Like that's a thing that happens. That's a thing that Doctor Who has done many times before, but it's a thing that happens in television in general. You know, you look at any genre television. Doctor Who has done it though before with Rose and Sarah Jane, and you know, any number of characters where they're just like, let's have this really touching, important moment, and then let's just keep bringing that person who had a great finale back again and again and again and again, just to play on either nostalgia, or we just want to have them have like a badass moment. We don't want them to end on a sad or unhappy thing or anything like that. Or, you know, it's got to be like, hey, they shoot a gun, you know, Rose comes back and like, look at my gun. It's just like, anyway, sorry.
I feel like they were going for more of a, of course he would overcome the Cybermen programming thing, but I get where you're coming from.
What about the 30 million other people that have been with the Doctor in the last like 80 seasons of this show who, you know, probably have just as much willpower as he did? I don't know.
Hey, don't compare people to the Brig. Don't do that.
At Kostuch says, oh my, what crap. Generally hated it. Great actors. Good character wasted by a bad story. Star Trek: The Next Generation all over again. He says he liked the callbacks like UNIT and Lethbridge Stewart. The story was terrible. Feel like good points and clarity were left out.
I'm just going to start openly mocking all of our listeners. I'm sorry.
That's fucked up.
Christopher Noonham was at Fresh and Pork. Says quite a bit sloppy. Not the best finale, but not altogether terrible. They could have done a lot of things better. At Shadow's End says, it had so much potential to be great and still felt underwhelming. The Master was a wasted opportunity as they did nothing with it.
Disagree.
Yep.
still also disagree, I think.
Annalise says, it was awesome, weird, stupid, heartbreaking. WTF and all at the same time. Ergo, a bit of a mixed bag for me.
Okay.
Sheila Friend says, thank you for following me.
Okay. You're welcome.
Welcome.
Yeah. Let's see.
Wait,
here.
Don't,
yeah. Klaus Eric says, the best thing about this episode were Michelle Gomez and Capaldi. The worst, the script they had to act. Carl Padgum says, weak. That finale was so very, very weak. Much like the series in general, Capaldi's been fine, but some of those episodes. John, who's at Deuce BC, all he replied back with was hashtag bring back Matt Smith.
He must be new to Doctor Who. I don't know if he's seen how this goes.
At Carmaquarius, Mario says, Capaldi brought back that air of classic Who the show needed badly. Is a great Doctor. Interesting.
Okay.
Alan Paxton, regular listener Alan Paxton, says, well, Missy managed to be creepy, but poorly used. It felt dramatic, but something felt off with the whole thing. The other thing is I can't score if the season was off because they are finding their feet writing a dark show. The early Smith seasons felt like the writers were comfortable with the dark fairy tale, but struggled with just dark. Yeah, I think the early seasons of Matt Smith, or that early season, was very fairy tale-ish. I think the whole era was kind of this fairy tale, which I liked.
Yes. See, I'm very glad to be done with that. You want to talk about cop-out endings. I mean, every Matt Smith ending ever was a cop-out ending, short of the Amy Rory stuff, which didn't make sense when you go into that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean...
I kind of actually agree with that. Like, I think before that, like, Matt Smith was always stronger than the script that he was given.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, remember that the universe exploded, but he stopped that by walking through the crack. But then Amy wished him back into existence. Mm-hmm. She wished him back into existence, like her fairy tale man. Like, come on, guys, we've had some god-awful...
Her raggedy little man,
There's no way that we could... never mind. Point is, don't forget that there have been some shit-ass finales. I'm glad that we're getting away from the straight-up fairy tale stuff.
You remember, like, the whole fucking wish him back to life, I believe in fairies crap, that was also in the RTD era, too. That was master finale with, like, you're old, Doctor, but we've told your story to enough people that we're all going to clap our hands and you'll be...
Oh, I hate that. But that said, I feel like that was few and far between, like... Compared to, like, when Rose gets trapped in a different dimension, or when Martha walks out on her own because she realizes that, like, it's not working out kind of thing, or when, you know, God, Donna Noble, right? And then the Doctor realizes he has to travel alone. Like, I give him credit. Russell T. did some,
some interesting things. The
finale's better than Moffat does if we're going, like, you know, season for season.
Corey... Seven of Rhymes says, it sucked, but was also refreshing. Hopefully Moffat retires or something before season 9 starts. Era Kosakowski at The Redux says, nice shout out for classic Whovians with the Brig, but really creepy at the same time. Also, it was great to see Kate, her favorite Moffat female character, but heartbreaking to see Osgood go. I agree. I was really enjoying Osgood.
Agreed, too. Osgood. Powerful stuff. Very powerful stuff.
Yep.
I really thought the Doctor would come down and something would stop that, or maybe she'd take her hostage or whatever.
Yeah.
But nope, vaporized. And then, okay, you guys will admit, I know you hated this season finale, but there were some good scenes, right? Like when the Doctor walks down and realizes what happens and his reaction. Like, again, Capaldi, which we've been in agreement all season, elevates everything he's in. Like all the emotion on his face when he realizes what Missy's done. He accidentally crunches the glasses and stuff. Come on.
I agree. I agree with that, but then they kind of like, they move away from that thing really, really quickly, and it's just like he has about 4 seconds to portray the emotion of that scene before they're like, oh, by the way, here's some stuff about the phone. That another thing about this episode that I kind of bothered me was just like, it took him that long to figure out she was the one with the phone number, like, and that had called them in the shop and everything like that. The woman in the shop
had a lot going on. He was thinking about a lot of stuff.
I guess, but she literally had to spell it out for him. Like, we figured this out. Like,
yeah, but that's how it's always been with the Doctor, especially the last couple of years. Doctor idiot, you know, everything's going on, and then his brain clicks into place because he's got all the pieces and doesn't put them together.
Yes, but like, I guess, I don't know, like, if you go, again, you know, comparing this to old Doctors, you go back to, like, a Matt Smith or somebody like that talking about, like, that, there would be, like, or David Tennant especially, he'd have a moment where he would literally see the realization dawn on his face, and then he'd slap himself in the head, and he'd have, a great monologue about, like, oh, my head's too full of stuff, I need a bigger head, that sort of thing, whereas this Doctor, it plays it so straight and so much just like, oh, I do not... how did I not see this coming from a million miles away, like everyone else, like that I'm supposed to be so much smarter than
Danny Pink is God.
4 seconds on, you know, being upset is a lot more than this Doctor usually gives us in terms of people dying around him. So,
Finally, Mustafa Alismail says, overall, I like the whole season. Finale was good, but had its issues. I definitely cut Danny's speech plus kid return scene. That was at the Danny as God.
Was Jesus. Awesome.
Gomez is pretty damn great, which is nice. He says Gomez is pretty damn great, which is nice. Since no one did the character right for the past 41 years, I feel.
Hey, Dallin.
Yeah.
Do you want to say that listener's name one more time?
It is Mustafa Ali Ismail.
Okay, I was just, you know, making sure that you're actually pronounced, like, the way that you pronounced it the first time, it sounded like you were just saying, like, oh, yes, this is Mustafa.
Oh, sorry, my throat is ready to get ripped out.
So I apologize for laughing. I thought that was the end of his statement, but, man, I forgot about that speech.
Yeah,
that
oh,
speech
my God.
Was hilarious. All this Danny Pink stature stuff, and then these... These robots are just like, okay, well, gonna fly up when you give us the order. So the thing I will say,
this is where I am throwing Moffat the benefit of the doubt. Not to deal with him saluting Danny's soldier speech, given that it's Remembrance Day. You know, it was Remembrance Day yesterday in the UK on Tuesday, and obviously Veterans Day. I'm thinking that played into it a little, or perhaps a lot. And, you know, because I thought about it. I watched that scene. I rewatched that scene. Does it feel out of place for Doctor Who? Very. Can it be? Is it kind of cheesy? Yes. But I think to give Moffat perhaps the benefit of the doubt of trying to do something nice, failing miserably, but trying anyway, I think that might have been the case that this was a, you know, a nod to all the soldiers, to everybody. Because, I mean, it's 2014, and, you know, it's not many of these soldiers who died in World War II in particular are still around. So, you know, I mean, it's a very big thing in the UK is Remembrance Sunday, which would have been the day after it aired, and, you know, Remembrance Day, which is today. Yesterday, Tuesday. So I will give him the benefit of the doubt and perhaps trying to be touching, but unfortunately I think he's just so ham-fisted in everything Doctor Who does. And I actually went and rewatched some Sherlock episodes this week just to see if I'm just snarking at him because he's Moffat. And the Sherlock stuff still stands the test of time. The Sherlock stuff, even season one, yes, there's some silly bits and bobs, but there is definitely, you know, it's still quality writing. Whereas, as we discussed, you know, a lot of the Matt Smith stuff has rapidly become unwatchable, as, you know, the Russell T. Davis stuff has become, you know, kitschy and unwatchable. But I know that Moffat has it in him to do an amazing two-parter. Let's talk about Silence in the Library. You know, the Vashta Narada, first time they were introduced. That was a brilliant two-parter.
Yeah.
Minimal special effects. You know, one or two locked sets, and it was great. It was intimate, and it was cool, and it dealt with, you know, people, you know, somebody being, you know, saved to a computer hard drive, much like these guys are. So shit, there you go. I just realized he reused that bloody concept for this. But I mean, it's in to do this, but perhaps it's only in him for him to have 20 or so brilliant ideas that he can execute before he starts having to retread, and when he retreads, he can't do it properly.
I think that was something you brought up previously, and I absolutely think that's a great idea. I think Moffat is a good writer. I just don't think he's a good showrunner. Like, you know, you talk about how good the writing is on Sherlock, sure, but that's three episodes a season, not 13, that he has to overview every single time and then write a big finale that ties everything together and is going to most definitely lead into a season after season after season. Whereas with, you know, Sherlock, that first season could have, it ends on a huge cliffhanger, to be honest. So they probably knew that they were going to do a season two, but, you know, take out the that stuff and, like, make it just a super ambiguous ending. And I think it still works as a really good self-contained ending. This is just like, I just don't think he has the chops to keep things cohesive. I think, in small bursts, brilliant. Awesome. Blink, great. Weeping Angels, great. The Silence, like, just the basic concept of the Silence, you know, ignoring what they became later, great. It's just, he over time, attrition just gets to him. He just can't sustain himself over extended seasons.
Well, let's review this episode out of 5 Cybermen heads.
Oh, this will be fun.
Yeah.
I just want to say I love that scene with the
That was pretty interesting. Oh, we can't harm you. Here's this.
You left this here last time you tried something.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to admit, there's some really good scenes in there.
Anytime Kate is on screen, I'm happy. Like, mm-hmm. I was so afraid that they actually killed her after they killed Oswin.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, no, you didn't. No, you didn't, Mama. Don't do this to me.
Steven, how many broken Cyberman heads do you give out of 5? How many?
Two and a half.
Okay.
Didn't hate it. Didn't love it. Moments I liked. Moments I hated. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sean, how about you?
I'll go last.
Okay. Marcus, how about you?
Half.
Half.
One half of one head.
One handle.
Half a handle.
I'm gonna give this a 1. The only thing I did like were. That ending with that kind of human scene with Clara, I think, was really the only thing that did anything for me this episode. But okay, Sean, what do you give it?
I'm going 4.
4. Wow. All right. Okay. I can understand why you think that. You're wrong, but I can understand why you think that. So that's good.
Mm-hmm.
with that said, which I say every week, but I like to say it. We're going to wrap up this episode. I don't think I can physically handle it anymore. I'm not getting sick because talking to you guys, or maybe I am, who knows.
Well, we'll do our season wrap, right? Yep. Or is that a thing we're still going to do?
Yeah, we're going to do a season wrap-up show next week.
I'd like to think, in addition, that maybe we should think about what our favorite finales have been.
Oh, that'd be a great idea, actually. It's a good one,
I'd like to think about that in contrast to this.
So. Yeah, it's a good point. We could do that next week as well.
It's easy to forget the past 7.
So. All right, Steven, Marcus, that's your assignment as well as mine. go back and look at our favorite finales over Doctor Who.
Yeah, I'd actually be curious, too, because I'm sure Marcus has seen a lot of the older ones, too, that I know for sure I haven't. So.
Okay. Sean, where can we find you?
At Sean Norton, SHAUNNORTON.
Steven?
You can find me at Steven Strom, STEVENSTROM, as usual. Just, again, another shameless plug that I love to do on the show. I'm still doing some stuff for Ars Technica. 2 reviews of mine just went up yesterday as we're recording this, which are Assassin's Creed Unity, which I hated, and Dragon Age Inquisition, which I loved. So you can go check those out if you want.
Marcus?
You can find me actually in my new position, so I'm excited to announce this. I am actually the U.S. Representative of the Stephen Moffat Fan Club.
You totally had me going. Totally had me going.
Oh, Christ.
My gamer.
You can find me at Dolly Domofsky. You can find us at Lonely TARDIS and on LonelyTARDIS.com. Please rate and review us on iTunes and on Stitcher and everywhere else we pop up. It definitely helps. And go see Interstellar because it was a much better Doctor Who episode than
the Interstellar was phenomenal.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, really good. I really liked it. Marcus, you see Interstellar?
Yes, I really enjoyed Interstellar, to be honest with you.
Yep.
I really I tweeted this out this week. I mean, it did help that one of my favorite Dylan Thomas poems, "Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night," was recited. I'm hoping that somebody at the BBC starts reciting that and doesn't let Doctor Who go gentle into that good night, because it's Moffat time and it will go gentle into the dark and never return.
All right, so goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everyone.
We love you. We love all of your listeners. I'm sorry I insulted you constantly. So laugh at you. Woo! Pops and stuff flying to the screen, and then there's electricity, and the TARDIS spins around, I guess. Eyebrows!